All right, our agenda is here. On the agenda today, introduction of new members, if there are any, a wrap-up of the United Nations Internet Governance Forum meeting, which went really, really well last week. Hopefully a quick rundown. Chris, if you could give us a quick rundown of the Badge Alliance and the JSON-LD discussions that are going on there. Unfortunately, everyone that wanted to be there last week was in Istanbul, Turkey instead, and it was hard to dial in, but an overview of that would be great. A quick update on the charter vote status, and then we'll jump into use cases. Anything else that should be added to the agenda? Anything else we should discuss today or be aware of? Okay, I think everyone that is on the call today was on the call last week. Evgeny, the only thing, I don't know if, Evgeny, were you here last week or not? I forget.
No, I don't. It was my participation in Credentials Community Group call.
Okay, would you mind doing a really quick introduction of yourself then for the rest of the folks on the call?
Okay, I'm Evgeny Vinogradov. I'm from Yandex, and we are participating in a few H3C community and internet groups, including payments and creation group as well.
Great, thanks. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Again, please.
No, sorry. I thought I cut you off. If you had anything else, please go ahead with that. But if not, we can proceed. Okay, great. Thanks, Evgeny. All right. Next up is the United Nations Internet Governance Forum. I guess we can call it a after action review. So last week we met in Istanbul, Turkey with the global community. This is an event that's put on by the United Nations called the Internet Governance Forum. The point of it is to get policymakers, legal teams, government officials together under the same kind of roof and technologies under the same roof to talk about the future of the internet, things like pervasive monitoring, human rights issues, education, outreach, getting the next 3 billion people connected to the internet and the web, mainly from a topic standpoint, mainly from a policy framework standpoint, not necessarily a technology standpoint. So we held a workshop. By we, I mean Mary Bold, myself, Pindar Wong, who have been involved in the credentials and payments work, along with Jeremy Malcolm from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Louise Bennett from the British Computer Society, held a workshop there where we tried to get the international community to chime in on credentials, specifically as they relate to payments, but credentials in general, this idea that we should have some kind of credentialing mechanism built into the core architecture of the web. And it went, Mary, feel free to chime in a bit, but I think it went really, really well. We were doing something pretty experimental. Typically what happens is you have a group of like five panelists sit up in the front of the room and they kind of talk for 60 minutes straight and the audience listens and then you get like three questions and then it's done. And quite frankly, it's a fairly painful process to sit through because you have all these experts in the audience and you don't take advantage of it. So the workshop that we did focused on basically minimizing the amount of time the panelists spoke. So the panelists only talked for about 10 to 15 minutes, and the rest of the time was audience input and participation, basically finding out from lawmakers, governmental bodies, and anyone that was in the room from civil society and government, what they thought about the credentialing work that we've been doing in the payments group for the past couple of years, as well as things like the Badge Alliance work and just credentialing in general for the web. And we were concerned that it would be difficult to get engagement with the audience, and that was not the case at all. The audience immediately started engaging. We got a really great conversation going for 90 minutes. So we had a bunch of really fantastic input from people that cared about, things like, how do governments use this credentialing technology? How do we ensure privacy? How do we ensure that, this doesn't help pervasive monitoring? So great input and a great set of contacts. Just about everyone in the room said that they wanted to be involved in the work that we're doing here. So we have 21 people from places like the Federal Trade Commission and the government of Turkey and all these types of, organizations saying they wanted to be involved. So it's really great. There's a video that I'm going to put in the IRC channel. So this is the IGF payment privacy policing paradox workshop video. So there's a video there. It's an hour and 15 minutes long. It's really interesting to see the interaction with the audience. And if you're not quite sure about, the technical work we're doing here, the video is good to kind of really bring you up to speed on how everything works or how everything's designed to work. There is going to be a transcript, a typed transcript of the video that we'll try and release as soon as it's ready. And there's also a workshop report, kind of an after-action review workshop report that we're putting together now that we hope to have done in the next week to week and a half. So we're going to take all of that input and then feed it into the W3C technical plenary. Basically, the argument is, look, a lot of people care about this stuff around the world. People feel like it's something that we should do, so the W3C should create a technical working group, an official, standards track technical working group as soon as possible to take this work on. Okay, so with that being said, Mary, do you have any additions to that?
Sure. Love to add a couple of comments. There were more than 40 people in the room. They were an active audience, and that was at the invitation of Manu and Pindar, who had a very inventive presentation style. And so the video should show you some of that. Essentially, they said, we're not going to do talking heads across a panel at the front of the room. And so they really did get people engaged in the process of understanding web payments. And what I would go ahead and say, Manu, is I don't think anyone in that room felt as though it was being dumbed down for them. I think they genuinely appreciated seeing the steps being taken, imagining information crossing the web, moving from browser, from processor, et cetera. So no one took that as being too pedantic in any way. Instead, they took it as a good live action explanation. So I think that helped make the audience engaged. I think the first question came within about 10 minutes or something, so that's outstanding at one of these conferences. So part of that was just a lively presentation. I was fascinated that the questions ranged from technical down to tell me again where the money is. So in that regard, I would say this did its job as a presentation. Frankly, these people will probably be coming back to learn more. That was my impression.
Great. Thanks, Mary. Any questions at this point about the IGF or what we're going to do to follow up or just general strategic questions on why we did it in the first place?
It's Tim Holden here. The only question I have is that do you have any strategy in place in how you're going to maintain the contacts that you may have made at that session? Yeah, or at the IGF.
The IGF?
Yeah.
So we have a list of email addresses, and we will be at least updating those email addresses. We'll be sending them information about how to join the Credentials Community Group and how to participate in the work shortly. And then we told them that we would give them quarterly updates on the progress of this group. And the hope is that they will be enticed enough to join the group in time. It's the same kind of strategy that we've been following with the Web Payments Group. We have a list of 185 organizations for the Web Payments Group where we send out updates about every quarter on things that they might be interested in, like, for example, the vote for the Web Payments Interest Group is happening this month. You may want to participate in the vote, things like that. So really, it's going to be quarterly updates via email and invitations to join the Credentials Community Group and participate in a deeper manner. Did that answer your question?
Yes, I think it did. I would note that I'm finding extraordinary interest within the education sector for qualifying educational credentials. Some of that interest may come from someone who is technically savvy but may not participate in the group, in the standards process, and would otherwise have an array of different stakeholders who are, you know, being advised of these things, but may not be technical. So, but also may have valuable input. So I pose a question around how to encourage the growth of the community around the needs of credentialing, I guess. And it's really encouraging to get so much positive feedback.
Great, fantastic. Yeah, it's really an open question on how to best engage all of these groups. I mean, we have a fairly scattered, it's not scattered, but we have a very broad group of interests here. So we've got, you know, people that are interested in government ID and government identification. We have people that are interested in educational credentials. We have people that are interested in, you know, finance and know your customer information. So trying to pull all those people into the same conversation is always going to be a challenge. So, yeah, I mean, any thoughts that anyone has on how we can better engage with all of these groups, we would certainly welcome that sort of discussion on the mailing list or on these calls. Okay, anything else on IGF before we move forward?
The video that you're talking about, is that the one that was also, it's on YouTube? It was sent through the listeners?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it starts out, I think, I'm unfortunately, they didn't hit the record button until, I think, 10 minutes into it. So we missed all of the introductions from the panelists, but the good news is that all the panelists pre-recorded their introduction. So you don't actually end up missing anything. We'll put the full set of video there, but the video that I'm talking about has me in a purple shirt on the left and then Jeremy Malcolm from the Electronic Frontier Foundation on the right. That's the one that we're referring to. Okay.
Cool.
Anything else on the IGF? Okay, let's go ahead and switch to the Badge Alliance and Jason LD discussion. I think last week the Badge Alliance had a discussion about the use of JSON LD for the Open Badges work. Chris, would you mind giving us a quick rundown of what that discussion is about and where you feel the Badge Alliance community is on the use of JSON LD in that general direction?
Sure. I'm putting a link to the notes that were in the agenda also, but just in case anybody needs them.
Okay.
So just with a background, I think probably everybody on the call knows about the Badge Alliance and about the Open Badges project, but just in 60 seconds or so, the Open Badges project is a project geared mostly at education. Or I guess that's really the target market in the early stages of the project. We were incubated at Mozilla, worked with a lot of folks to a standard that allows an issued digital badge to be validated and verified who sent it and to whom and what for, and also some ways to link it to evidence and make it portable and a bunch of other kind of cool stuff. The community is pretty vibrant. There's a lot of people working with the Open Badges standard. So the Badge Alliance was spun out of Mozilla, and it follows the Constellation model, where we have working groups that are focused on different aspects of badging. So the working group that I chair is the Open Standard Working Group. So we're continuing to work on the different specific examples of how to use the specifications to issue badges and to kind of keep things moving forward. So, you know, Manu and Accredit Trust have been involved for a long time, and we've really spent a lot of time with Manu more recently talking about adding JSON LD to the badges specification to make it a little bit more robust and flexible and give us some options for things like digital signatures. And also to enable the idea of adding extensions to the specification. So if you want to add something like location or something that's domain specific to what you're working on, JSON-LD has this ability to add extension. So that's what sort of brought us to it initially. We've been working on it for the last couple of weeks, kind of off and on, mixed with some other work. We're at the point now, and the notes kind of bear it out. They start on line 46 in that Etherpad that I linked to, that it seems like the standards working group and some of the other technically minded working groups inside the alliance are sold on JSON-LD. Where we're kind of not falling down, but where we're concerned is that kind of like Tim's point earlier in the call, we have it's an education focused community. In a lot of cases, they're not super technical, and the relatively simple process of issuing a badge that we have today still completely confuses a significant portion of the community. So we're a little bit concerned about adding complexity. And so a lot of the discussion that we had last week was really, how do we roll this out to the community? So, excuse me, I started with a blog post on line 48, and then I think over the next couple of weeks, we're really going to do an education effort inside the Open Badges community to kind of sell them on the idea of JSON-LD, and then backfill it with tools and tutorials on how to use everything. So I feel like we have a good kind of tentative plan, but it's not going to be an instantaneous switchover. It's going to take a while for the Open Badges community to really start using JSON-LD as the default way of issuing a badge or describing a badge that's been issued.
So is there anything that we can do? And I apologize, I've been unable to, you know, join in that discussion and help more than, I mean, we want to help. We've just been slammed with other stuff, but hopefully we'll have some breathing room over the next month. Is there anything that we could focus on to help you sell the technology within the Badge Alliance? Like, would it help to, like, maybe mark up a badge, or would it help to link to the videos, or maybe do some kind of tutorial? What would be, if we could only do one thing, what should that thing that we do be to help you kind of sell this stuff internally?
Well, so it's actually not selling it internally at this point. It's really the broader community. And so that, I think, is just going to take time. Mm-hmm. I mean, we need to give them resources. So I'll definitely take you up on the offer of adding resources into some of the discussions that we're planning on starting in some of the mailing lists. But I think that also we just need to find, we need to target a few issuers of badges to get them to just adopt the new standard that hasn't been written, hasn't been formalized. But, you know, we need, so for instance, it's not even a for instance. We have some members of the standard that I'd like to start working with to get them to experiment with JSON-LD. And I think that they're primed because this move to JSON-LD is going to open up the idea of endorsement of badges. So one organization's badge or an issued badge. And so I think that could be the sort of like killer app that gets people to understand the where we're headed with the specification and the standard. So yeah, I think if there's the one thing that you could do is to sort of just be available as the sort of go-to hand-holding experts on the standard and really help a few key players get over any technical hurdles that they've got. And so far you've been totally doing that, so I think we're in good shape.
Okay. Just as a point of information for you, Dave Longley here is one of the co-creators of JSON-LD, as well as Dave Lane is also on the call. So they know, you know, everything that I know and more about JSON-LD. So you might want to also ping them as well, and then one of the three of us will be able to get back to you and respond. So two thoughts. One of them is that it might be easier to go over this stuff in a high bandwidth setting, like just a one-on-one call to just go through and answer all the questions that you have to make sure that you've got the concepts fairly clear in your head. Because, you know, responding to mailing lists, we're drowning in email right now. We're very far behind. So if you need something very quickly, I think just pick up the phone and call. You don't have to schedule anything. Just pick up the phone and call, and we'll try and, you know, get through whatever questions you have in, you know, 15 or 30 minutes. So just a point of information for you. Don't be shy about reaching out.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, so do you have any, is there a timeline that you're thinking, or are you just like, you know, well, it's going to take a couple of months and, you know, we'll do the best that we can with creating, you know, blog posts and responses to mailing list traffic to get everybody on board? Is that the general thought at this point?
That's the general thought right now, but I don't think that's going to fly for very long. So I think we need a little bit more of a plan with some dates and deliverables, and, you know, put some khaki pants on it and get it out the door.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Let us know what we can do in this community as well as just, you know, personally. So.
For sure. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else on Badge Alliance and the JSON-LD discussion? Any questions from anyone about it for Chris?
I just note that I'm looking at an application that's trying to promote physical activity. So if there's a way that I can come up with something that's mutually beneficial, I'd love to. Yeah.
Okay, great. Chris, that's Tim Hallborn,
sure,
in Australia.
Yep, I'll put my email address into the IRC.
Great. Any other questions regarding Badge Alliance and JSON-LD? Okay, let's move then to the charter vote. We have a charter that's being voted on currently here. Tim, you had mentioned, I believe, on the mailing list a number of changes that you would like to see in the charter. We had a quick discussion offline about it. There are certainly all things that we should consider, and a number of things I personally believe should be in the charter as well. I think the problem with doing it right now is we're mid-vote, so we can't change anything because of the people that already, it would invalidate the votes of the people that already voted. And we'd have to run the whole, voting process again, and it would take time. It would take a minimum of like another month to make the changes, make sure everyone's read it, and then hold another vote. And given our time crunch on having something in time for TPAC, I feel like we should, and this is just a proposal, I feel that we should postpone the changes until we have a operational charter. So the idea would be, let's just finish the vote up this week on the charter, adopt the charter as is. It looks like it's got a decent amount of consensus, and then propose Tim's changes and do that vote in parallel with everything else that we're doing. If we take that strategy, then we at least we have an operational charter and we can start voting on other things like use cases and things of that nature. Tim, would you be averse to that proposal, or would that work for you?
Yeah, look, that's accepted. I'm still learning some of the W3C process, so I can appreciate some of the tactical things that you're talking about, and it's accepted. The only thing is, can you post in the IRC where the vote link is?
Sure. Yeah. Here's the vote link is here. We typically what happens with these votes is everyone votes at the very very beginning, and then within 24 hours of the vote closing. So we've got six people that have voted so far, and I expect hopefully if you haven't voted and you're on the call today, please jump in and vote. But we'll see other people kind of I'll send a ping out to the mailing list saying, hey, for those that haven't voted, vote now. So those votes will probably come in between 48 hours before, 24 hours before the vote actually closes. The vote closes this Friday, close of business Eastern time. Any questions on the charter vote status or Tim's suggested modifications? Okay. If there are none, we'll go ahead.
I was having trouble unmuting. Is there a link to the proposed changes? I totally agree with the direction that you're suggesting. I'm just interested in seeing the changes.
Tim, do you have that link handy? It's another Google Doc. I think Tim basically copied the Google Doc that we had, or the charter that we had, and put it in the Google Doc.
I didn't edit the one online. What I did was I just grabbed it and pulled it into Google and scribed into it and then posted the link in the list. I've just added the link to the IRC.
Tim, at a high level, did you want to go over the modifications that you wanted? Could you like summarize it really quickly in maybe 2 to 3 minutes?
Yeah, look, I think the first is a bit about terminology. So I call it a digital instrument that digitally verifies an instrument that digitally verifies something, and some of the terminology around safety and security, which I've noted around some of the language that Vint Cerf and other people have been using in this space, because of course you can be entirely secure, but not necessarily safe. Incorporating means to support personal data security. So Manu replied this week, I think, with respect to the ORDL community. So I'll just put that in there as well. ODRL, sorry. Which I think is this community, that provides some of the syntax around data rights. So I share this credential for the purpose of you sending me a product or something like this. I added the web ID. Oh, no, in the dot point, I added data safety. And I think I added web ID as a dependency or liaison. Web ID currently has a lot of very bright web community associated to it through FOF particularly, which supports a lot of persona. So my view was that although the concept of persona and credentials are very separate, they kind of need to know about each other so that you don't end up with a pervasive credential that cuts across all persona, if that made any sense. At least that was something that I thought was perhaps worth involving them in the group. And from what I'm aware, Manu has actually started that conversation. And I think that's it. Those are the main things.
Okay. Yeah. So basically the ability to protect yourself from having your data taken from you and used for a reason that you do not agree to, like having your data sold to someone else or someone basically stealing your credentialing and handing it to someone that you didn't want it handed to. So you want to be able to express that this credential is only for the purpose I am giving it for you, giving to you for. You are not allowed to sell it. You are not allowed to transmit it to a third party. You're not allowed to, you know, store it for forever. Right. So that's
to be able to express those sorts of things in relation to credentials, and to make sure that a credential isn't pervasive, so that a credential isn't used in association to any web session, for example. We've discussed this sort of thing, so I just tried to make some edits in there that, that I thought might have provided some additional safeguards around it. Yeah, and also the fact that it's an instrument, it's a digital instrument, so a bit like a contract. When you sign a contract, the signature is the contract is a legal instrument. So that was one of the terminology things that I thought might have aided the process. Any comments? Are there any comments? I haven't had any feedback really from it.
So personally, I think it's a good idea, and this is my just personal position, not company position or anything else. Personally, I think it's a good idea. I think the ODRL ODRL community, for those that aren't familiar with it, have been working on this mechanism to allow you to specify rights associated with data. So when you transmit data, you specify what the rights, usage rights for that data are. So they've been working on that problem for quite a while, and we should be able to just reuse what they've developed over the past 3 to 4 years. The problem right now is that no one's actually stepped forward and done a technical implementation to make sure it works. We think it should work, but from what I understand, you know, I don't think Badge Alliance or the work that has been done on the identity credential stuff has a way of expressing you may only use this information for X, Y, and Z purposes. And that's, it's fairly, you know, it's a fairly important thing to give people, you know, rights over their own data, to be able to have someone express what they would like their rights to be.
Sorry. I'll also note that the guy who's the chair for the ODRL community is based in Australia. He has a background in health systems. I've had a range of conversations with him, and I feel quite confident about that process and their ability to participate and add value to the scope of web payments and credentials. So I think that's a really positive move. However, I do note that they are not in the dependency liaisons section of the charter either.
Yep, they should probably be out.
So that will be another edit. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else on the charter vote or Tim's proposed modifications to the charter before we move on? Okay. Next up is the use case review. Currently, we're dumping all of the identity-related use cases from the web payments group into this community group, and basically handing over, you know, what those use cases are and how they're modified to this group. The web payments group. Community group is now entirely dependent on the output of this group as far as credentialing and identity. So the hope is that this group, the credentials community group, is going to take the web payments identity use cases very seriously. So there's a link in IRC for the use cases, and I guess at this point maybe it would be good to just go through a very high-level set of use cases. Does anyone have any preference on how we go through this? What I was guessing we would do is just read through the use cases very quickly, explain what is meant by them, and then talk about any concerns people have with any of the use cases. So we're just going to read through them, not really pause to discuss, and then we'll go back and discuss the ones that are of concern to people in this group. Does that seem like an okay strategy for covering this stuff, or would people rather do something else?
That's fine.
That's great, Manu.
Okay. Yeah,
fine.
Fine.
Okay. All right. So let's go through them. I'm at the URL in the IRC channel. Actually, if you scroll up a little bit, there's a glossary of terminology. So we define who a payer, a payee, a buyer, a merchant, and a payment processor are. Clearly, this language is going to have to change because we're not just talking about payers and payees in this group. We're talking about general, you know, people and organizations on the web. So we're going to have to change, you know, whenever we say payee or payer, in a use case, we're probably going to have to modify it slightly. So keep that in mind as we read through the use cases here. Dave Longley, I'm going to copy and paste these into IRC to save you some time typing. Okay, so the first use case, and we only have a few of them for identity. The first use case is to store basic credentials and payment provider information on the web in a way that is easy to share with various payees and merchants, given authorization by the owner of that information, the payee of the owner of the credential, and in a way that is easy to synchronize between devices. So the idea here is you should be able to store a piece of information and then transmit it to who you want, and the only time it gets transmitted to who you want is when you give authorization to do that. So fairly basic use case.
What's the authorizer called? What would the authorizer called? So in this language from web payments, it says payments provider. However, if it was an education provider, it would be an educational institution. Or if it were a passport, it would be a government department. So the user would have a credential, but perhaps not from a payments provider?
That's correct. Yeah, we would probably strike the and payment provider information and maybe give an example of the types of credentials that we're talking about, educational credential, payment credential, digital passport, government ID credential, things of that nature.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
Okay. Next use case is that Steve, a buyer, visits a website, which is a merchant website, and authorizes the transmission of one or more credentials, such as proof of age, shipping address, etc., that was previously stored with a credential storage service. And they transmit it to the website, like the merchant website, to enable access or fulfillment of a transaction. So this use case has to do with someone providing a credential to a website to enable them to do something extra on the website, something that is a gated process on the website, something that they need authorization to do on the website, and something where the website is not just going to trust the person, they need some kind of third-party credential to give them access to it. So, for example, you know, in an extreme case, if someone wanted to shut down a nuclear reactor remotely, you would need to provide a number of high-stakes credentials to initiate that process. That's a fairly extreme example and one that we should probably avoid in the future. Let me keep going through these unless there's a big concern about that use case. So the use case is basically deliver a credential to a website that lets you do something extra.
Yeah, maybe as an alternative, it would just be the alternative example would just be a system administrator needs to provide some kind of credential to turn on or shut down a system.
Right.
So we don't have to turn
it. My island visual.
Or perhaps provide a credential so you can edit the website.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Has to provide a credential to access. Administrative portion of the website. Yep. Okay. Next use case is here. Given the opt-in permission of the participants, so for example, a payer, a payee, a buyer, or a merchant, given the opt-in permission of the participants of a transaction, the transaction metadata can be used to discover additional attributes associated with those participants. For example, given the buyer's authorization, a merchant could query the identity URL for the buyer contained in a digital receipt and obtain an up-to-date email address. So for example, for an educational credential, once an educational credential is delivered to, for example, an employer, that employer could utilize the identity URL of the sender, the owner of the credential. They could then perform a query on that URL and, given the authorization of the credential holder, pull other information like an up-to-date email address, an up-to-date mailing address from that person's identity URL. So this is all about, you know, once you have that credential, once you've transmitted that credential to someone, can they then do further discovery on you, given your permission? Any quick questions or concerns with that use case? Okay, then we'll move on. The next use case is digitally verifiable credentials, such that a merchant and payment processor involved in a transaction can prove that they have performed the proper due diligence when identifying the payer and the payee. So this is important because there's a lot of regulation in the financial industry, and the financial industry requires you, the government regulation that exists, requires the banks, for example, to prove that they know who their customers are, and they do that to prevent things like money laundering, anti-terrorism initiatives, things like that. So the idea here is that there's something that you receive that's effectively digitally signed, where you don't have to trust the person that's telling you the information. You can trust some other third party that you trust, like a government or a very well-known corporation, like Experian, who is in the business of you know, doing those kinds of background checks. Any questions about digitally verifiable credentials? This particular use case?
No, this is Mark. I actually want to go back one step to the permission to perform further discovery. At some point in time, we'll also need to be able to revoke that permission.
Yes. You're right, and we don't have that in the use case right now, so we should definitely clarify that. We should definitely have a discussion about that. There's a lot of thoughts that we've collected on that over the past couple of years, so very good point. Okay, any other comments on the previous use cases? Okay, the next use case that we have up is a pair executes a transaction without revealing secrets that are not vital to the transaction, such as exposing their actual identity, exposing a password or PIN number, or other information that the merchant does not need to know. So this use case is basically about making sure that this credentialing mechanism we're creating doesn't expose a whole bunch of extra information that you shouldn't have to expose. So, for example, if somebody wants to prove that you have a government-issued passport, there should be a type of credential to just prove that you have a passport issued from a government without having to hand over your passport that has all of your vital, you know, identification information in there, such as your passport number, age, weight, eye color, citizenship, place of birth, things like that. So this is the ability to atomize the credential such that you only send what you need to send. You only send the minimum amount of information to the receiver so that they can prove something about you. One example of this would be if you want to order a bottle of wine online, all you really need to do is complete a payment and then prove that you're above the valid drinking age in your country. Right? That's the only pieces of information. You don't need to tell them exactly what your birth date is, and you don't need to send them, for example, your driver's license or other government-issued ID. They just need to verify two very specific pieces of information that don't compromise your identity online.
I've got a question.
Sure.
GPS. I'm going to use the message. So the question is actually about whether or not we're supporting the capacity to lower the resolution of some sort of identifier. So the easy one would be, say, Facebook Messenger, for example, that currently gives point data on mobile phones about where someone is. Particularly, you can figure out where someone's in your lounge room or wherever they are, right? Whereas some linked data services such as Freebase has the ability to translate point data to postcodes or states or countries or whatever. And there are other ways of doing it. But have we got a use case around that, around the ability to lower the resolution?
I think this is that that use case, or it's meant to be. It's about lowering the resolution to the minimum resolution necessary to, pass whatever the merchant or the receiver needs to verify about you. But we don't have anything that's specific to GPS or tracking data or things of that nature. I'll also note that there are certain things that we can't do. Like, for example, we're not dealing with device APIs and permissions for those device APIs. So, for example, an ability of the web page to access your GPS device without your authorization. We can't create any standards in this group that prevent that. What we could do is inform other groups that are working on that technical work. So I guess the question back to you is specifically, which one are you concerned with addressing, the pervasive monitoring and tracking of someone's location, or the more general problem of just lowering resolution to the minimum required?
I'm just thinking that, for example, there is an authorization token that happens with Facebook Messenger to create that authentication with that login. So there are preferences that go with that sort of handshake, if you like, One part of it would be the credentialing side of it, potentially. Another side of it might actually be the ODRL side of it, the ontological language of how you're defining permissions. So I think that perhaps some of those things might be able to be defined there. I'm not sure. Or I guess that also comes to the point of, is there scope within the technology, within the specification process, to look at what happens if someone is not abiding by... Is the offerance and acceptance of a credential effectively some form of electronic contract? So if you have a credential and you find that the provider is misusing that credential outside of the realms of how you define, you know, you want it to be used, how is it rescinded?
Yeah, it's a big question. I mean, and it's, I think we're going to end up spending quite a bit of time discussing that. I mean, I think that the key thing to understand here is that it cannot be rescinded. Once you give a piece of data, you know, it's the same data copying problem. Once you give someone a piece of data, you cannot undo that, right? It's very easy to copy stuff. So we have to deal with, okay, once that data is handed over, is there some way that we can bring contract law into this, such that, you know, by accepting, it's like a reverse shrink wrap license. By accepting this data, you agree to these privacy settings that I attach to the data. So if you're going to use the data, you need to make sure that you follow the rules that I've attached to the data. I don't know if we really have, we don't have a use case for that right now, Tim, and if you wanted to write one up, I think that we'd really appreciate it, because, you know, like you said, it's important, it's certainly important to think about that stuff.
How about also the reputation of the credential issuer? Have we got use cases around that?
No, we don't have anything around reputation. No, we don't.
And is there any sort of concept around what requirements there are to be particular types of credential issuers, or whether or not you can, a user is able to identify the reputation of one from another?
We don't have anything around that either. Mainly because we think that's something that would potentially be out of the standard, although I can see there being an argument for there being a vocabulary to express whether or not a credential issuer is trustworthy. One way that we're looking at this is that, you know, it might be that the market ends up deciding which credential issuers are trustworthy or not, because remember that it's up to the person receiving the credential to decide whether or not they trust a digital signature on that credential. And if it, you know, if for whatever reason the market has decided that, you know, company X is a rogue company and shouldn't be trusted, then all of a sudden company X's digital signatures are going to start being rejected by the people that get their credentials. So there's an argument here for letting the market decide. But even if there is a, you know, even if that argument exists, there's still an argument that there should be some kind of technical vocabulary that everybody uses to express reputation and reputational risk for these credentials.
One of the significant use case area is around getting people to sign up to websites without using their email address.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, if you can get the password to their email address, then you can always reset their passwords.
Mm-hmm.
So a state-based bank, a passport provider, there are high-stakes credentials, and there are other credentials. If you know, to set up a .com, create an SSL certificate, and start issuing credentials.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess part of that, like, I mean, the vocabulary makes some sense, because in theory, with most identity checking systems, you need to get to a certain number of points of ID. So if you're in Australia, to open a bank account, you need 100 points of ID, which is like a Medicare card, which is our healthcare card system,
mm-hmm.
Maybe a birth certificate and some photo ID,
mm-hmm.
Something with your address on it. You know, now the digital equivalent I'd imagine. There must be a digital equivalent, whether that's, I mean, an SMS to your phone has a different level of credentialing to your relationship with the website or, anyway, yeah, so I guess that's something just to think about and something I will put a lot of thought into.
Yeah, please send the use case to the mailing list so that we can get that in there, because I think it is something that's been brought up over and over again. So we don't have a use case around that, around the 2 points that you raised. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. We have around 6 use cases left to go, which we will do on next week's call. Thank you, everyone, for joining the call today. Are there any closing thoughts, closing words, things that we should be aware of between today and the call next week? Okay. Thank you, everyone, for the call, and we'll chat again next week at the same time.
Thank you, Mano.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mano.